Well, Pastor JD kicked off the Jonah series last week, preaching through the first half of Jonah 1, and we decided that Jonah 1 had so much insight in it that we were going to do two sermons, that it deserved two different sermons. So this morning we'll be back in Jonah 1. It's about 50 pages left of the New Testament where the Gospel of Matthew is. If you don't have your Bibles, we'll have the words up on the screen for you this morning. Well, like JD also said last week, we're preaching through Jonah through a city lens, which means we're hoping and then we're praying that through this next 5 weeks that God would stir in us a greater compassion and love for the neighborhood of Benson and the city of Omaha. So we're praying that God would shape us and form us into people who are more compassionate by the time this series is done. And even though the Old Testament is filled with weird laws, right? It's filled with weird stories. It was written thousands of years ago, so it seems very foreign. The one thing that we can't miss when we read the Old Testament is the heart of God. As we read these stories, we see God's heart come out and we apprehend his grace in greater ways. That's why we need the Old Testament, and specifically, that's why we need the book of Jonah today. It's just as relevant to us today as it was back then. And so today I have five lessons for us from Jonah chapter 1. Five things that we learn from Jonah's fleeing from God. And so the first few verses go like this. God tells Jonah, go, go, go. And Jonah tells God, no, right? Hashtag Jesus Storybook Bible. Just for all you parents out there. So let's pick up the story in verse 4. So Jonah had just said no to God to go to Nineveh, his enemy city, to preach the gospel. Instead, he got in a boat and went in the exact opposite direction. So verse 4. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God. And they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. So the captain came and said to him, what do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give thought to us that we may not perish. So here is lesson one. Lesson one is our fleeing keeps us from working for the common good. Our fleeing keeps us from working for the common good. The captain had to come down to the bottom of the ship, right? And say, Jonah, get up. All these men are upstairs working their butts off to try to save our lives and save this ship. And what are you doing? You're taking a nap, right? And why was he taking a nap? Because he was so tired from running from God. He's in the bottom of the boat, sleeping. He's like, get up, do something. All the men upstairs are praying to their gods. They're lifting heavy cargo and throwing it off the ship so that we would not drown, and so we could live. Do something, Jonah. And Pastor Tim Keller has an incredible insight about this little dialogue between the captain and Jonah. He says that the typical posture of churches today is to confront the world. That if you listen to the message and the posture of churches, oftentimes it's trying to be confrontational to the world, saying, hey, you're not doing this, or you're doing this wrong. But in this little dialogue with Captain and Jonah, we see that the pagan captain is confronting the pastor on what he's not doing. And isn't it true that oftentimes it's not the church, but those outside the church that are actually doing the most for the common good of the city? If we look at the people that are outside the church, that they're the ones in Benson and they're the ones in Omaha who are doing all the heavy lifting, right, to help Omaha and help Benson be a better place. And thankfully, some of you are not in that camp. Some of you are doing awesome things and helping to lead our church toward working for the common good of the city. If I can brag on Leslie Wells for a little bit, please allow me to do that. He has a shirt called Common Good on today, so it's just a perfect illustration for this example. Leslie, actually, you might not know this, he moonlights, right, as a worship leader, but he has a full-time job with Common Community Development, and one of the things that he started was this recycling program, and it's a very unique recycling program because he employs homeless or low-income
people to get a job, to work this recycling program. And so he's out meeting with business leaders in Omaha. Specifically, he's out in Benson meeting with all the business owners on the strip to get them to buy in, to be a part of this recycling program. And in doing so, it beautifully does two things. It helps us steward, right, our resources on this planet, brings glory to God through stewardship, and it also brings glory to God by giving people who would never be able to make a living for their family, to give them a job, to be a part of making a paycheck and earning a living. And so Leslie's out there doing that right now, and it's just a good picture of what it looks like to lead our church in worship and to be a spiritual leader and also out in the city doing common good. And so some of you guys in here have been uniquely wired like Leslie with special gifts and special passions to make a difference in Benson and in the city. Some of you right now are fostering at-risk kids. You're adopting kids. Some of you are caring deeply for refugees in the city and helping them to get resettled. Some of you are working to cultivate art and music in the city. Some of you guys have a unique passion for education and for kids, and so on. The list goes on. And so I want to ask you this morning, just to stir our hearts to move more towards this, is to ask yourself this: what are you more passionate about than anyone else in this room? What are you more passionate about than anyone else in the room? If you had unlimited resources and limited time, what would you do to make Omaha, and specifically Benson, a better place to live in? And me and JD and Alex would want you to think about that passion and to not wait for us to have a top-down sort of communication approach, but for you to take risks and to jump in and just try new things. We'll even potentially give you some money, right? We want you to try to fail because we want you to be about the common good. We want to be a church that's not just a below-deck kind of church, but an on-deck kind of church that is out there leading in the community, leading towards the common good. Can we be a church that does that?
Yes.
Good. So one person does. JD does. Let's continue on in the story. Verse 7. And they said to one another, "Come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us." So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, "Tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? And of what people are you?" And he said to them, "I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, "What is this that you have done?" For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. So first off, let's try to understand this casting of lots. It's kind of strange. Well, the practice of casting lots was a lot like throwing the dice. It was actually a practice that was done by both the pagan nations and also God's people. God's people did it. We see in Psalm 16:33 this: that the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. So we see this practice, the Hebrew people saying, "God, we're going to cast these lots, and through this method, through this practice, we're going to trust that you will help give us discernment and guidance in a certain area." So God's people did this, but also the pagan nations did this as well, so it would have been a common practice. And so here we see the pagan sailors casting lots to get a divine answer as to why this storm was happening, whose fault it was. It was a lot like playing a game of spin the bottle, only when the bottle gets pointed towards you, rather than getting kissed, you get thrown overboard, right? It's not a game that you want to be playing if you're Jonah right now, right? Every read, that, the bottle spun, it landed on Jonah. In that moment, he'd been able to hide up until that point. He'd been able to hide for miles. He'd been sailing for miles. It probably was days, maybe even months. He'd been able to hide his fleeing from God. But in this moment, his sin was found out. In this moment, he realized that he couldn't get away from God, that the storm had caught up to him, and that he was guilty, and that his guilt was known by everyone on board. And here's where we get to lesson number two. Lesson number two is our fleeing affects other people. Our fleeing actually affects the people around us. So in that moment, Jonah had to endure an interrogation from the men who were suffering because of his disobedience. He thought his sin wouldn't be found out. He thought that maybe if enough time passed, that God would forget about his call to Jonah. But that wasn't what happened. God didn't forget. The storm caught up with him, and he had to look these men in the eyes, men who were fearful that they were going to die, and they were about ready to die because of Jonah. So in other words, I would say that his private sin had public consequences. It's an important lesson for us to understand that our private sin always has public consequences. And so like Jonah, we need to remember that everything we do behind closed doors right now, everything we think behind a veiled heart or veiled mind eventually will come out and implicate the people around us. We may be deceived into thinking that our attitudes, our behaviors, our habits aren't hurting anyone, but they always do. And oftentimes it's our friends and our family members who we bring the storm into their lives. They're the ones who often suffer more than the people who actually brought the storm in the first place. And so let's see what Jonah does now that he knows his guilt has been found out and he knows that everyone knows it's because of him that they're suffering. Verse 11, then they said to him, "What shall we do that the sea may quiet down for us?" For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. He said to them, "Pick me up and hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you." So far, Jonah has a bad rap, right? Jonah's fleeing from God. He's causing a storm. He's bringing a big mess on the ship. There's not a lot of good that we can point out in Jonah's life. But here, for the first time in the story, Jonah does something praiseworthy. He actually takes responsibility for his sin. In the text, he says, "It's because of me," right? Notice he doesn't try to blame or try to get away from it. He doesn't say, "You know that casting of lots? How about 2 out of 3? Anybody? 2 out of 3? No. He doesn't try to get out of it, try to weasel out of it. He says, "I am a Hebrew, and I fear God. And it's because of me that this storm has come upon you all." And so we're going to find out later in the story that it's because he takes responsibility for his sin and his disobedience that he actually ends up saving their lives and protecting them. He could have just taken his secret to the grave, right? He could have just not admitted his guilt and just had the storm kill everyone on board and taken that to the grave, but he didn't. In order to protect them, to protect the people around him, he took responsibility for his sin. Now, let's see how the sailors responded to Jonah. Verse 13, "Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land. But they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore, they called out to the Lord, 'O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay down on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, has done as it pleased you.' So they picked Jonah up, hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. And the Lord anointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights." Now let me just remind you that he protected them, right? He saved them because he took responsibility. Right? They ended up worshiping the Lord. Isn't that awesome? And so let me just ask you guys today, what are you doing right now that's hurting the people around you? What are you doing right now that's affecting your family members? What are you doing now in private that will come out publicly later? Right? Because what the seeds that you plant now in your life, the things you sow now will reap. God is not mocked, right? Whatever you sow, you will reap. And so the storm might not be here today, but there could be a storm 6 months from now. There could be a storm 2 years from now or 5 years from now. So let's be a church that care about each other, that care about this church, that care about our loved ones, and therefore take responsibility today for our actions and get help and confess those things. Let's be committed to confessing continually so that we can be protecting the people around us. And even so, these guys still didn't want to kill him, right? They said, "Nevertheless, the men rowed harder." And so here's lesson number 3, is that our fleeing can be used by God for good. Our fleeing can be used by God for good. I love this section because God takes a messy situation and somehow brings good out of it. Right? Jonah gets on this boat, brings a mess on board with him, and somehow and still ends up blessing the lives of the sailors. Isn't that amazing? I mean, you have these pagan sailors, right? They're just trying to do business as usual. They're like modern-day truck drivers. They're leaving their families to go do a round trip, to get a paycheck, come back so they can eat with their family and do business as usual. That's what the sailors were doing. They're just doing business as usual. And all of a sudden, Jonah comes on board, this Hebrew that's fleeing from his God, brings his mess on board. There's a storm that happens. And what happens? They all get saved. Isn't that amazing? And so it's interesting how God enters into their worldview and has compassion on these sailors. It's so cool because these sailors, although they are worshiping false gods, actually had a better worldview than most Americans do today. They actually believed in the sovereignty of God. So if you were to go on a cruise ship today and say, hey, do you guys know that you're not in control of your lives? They'd probably be like, oh, psh. They'd probably laugh at you, right? Like, of course I'm in control, right? But if you were to ask these sailors on the boat in Jonah's day, if you were to get on his boat and say to the sailors, hey, you're not in control of your life, they would probably say, oh, for sure. Like, of course. The gods The gods are in control of our lives. I'm not in control of my life, right? And so God enters into that worldview, right, to save them and to interact with them. And so when this storm happens, right, these sailors don't need a sermon on God's sovereignty. They don't need a call to worship on who's in control of their lives, right? They already know that the divine is in control. All they need at that point is proof. And God gives it to them, right? In the text, right, we see that the storm stops. Right when Jonah gets thrown overboard, that the storm ceases and there's peace. And they know, right? They're not like, oh yeah, the storm just stopped. It was, you know, some phenomenon. No, they know that it was the divine that stopped the storm. And in that moment, because they saw God work a miracle, the text says they worshiped him. They dropped to their knees. They offered sacrifices to Yahweh. Not to their gods, but they offered sacrifice to Yahweh. They worshiped him. And imagine what would have happened when they went home after that trip. I mean, imagine them going back to their wives and their kids, and their kids said, Daddy, how was your trip? They would have said, yeah, it's, you know, all right, you know, business as usual. No, they would have been like, kids, you know, wife, you wouldn't believe what happened. We were just doing business as usual. This Hebrew gets on board. We found out he was fleeing from his God. The storm came. We almost died, right? We almost died in the storm. Almost didn't come back, but yet this Hebrew confessed that he was fleeing from the gods, so we rowed hard to try to save him, but that didn't work, so we had to throw him overboard, and then God stopped the storm. It was the Hebrew God that did this. I found out that the Hebrew God is the true God. Man, this had ripple effects on their families and probably the people they shared the story with for years to come after this. So isn't it cool that God took Jonah's disobedience and worked it for good to save many lives? That's how gracious God is. And so this is good news for us as a church, right? Because many of us are ashamed of our story like Jonah. I bet Jonah did not want to share this getting thrown overboard kind of thing the rest of his life. Probably something he's not going to be happy to share. And many of you guys have things in your story that you're ashamed about. There's alcoholism that plagues your story. There's sexual sin that's been a part of your story. Adultery. Maybe a history of religious pride and condemnation that you're ashamed about because you've been prideful and condemning your whole life towards other people. Maybe abuse has been part of your story. But this is beautiful that your story can become the ship that you invite others onto to experience the supernatural work of God in your life. Man, that some of you may be afraid that you don't know what to share, you don't know enough about the Bible, you don't know how to actually effectively reach people in Benson or the city or other family members, but all you have to know is your story. And all you have to be willing to do is be authentic about your story and share your story. because this is such an important observation to stop and pause on, is that this observation is that God used the gospel message later on in the book of Jonah to save the whole city of Nineveh. But in this part of the story, God uses Jonah's story to save a ship full of sailors. So later he'll use the gospel message through Jonah's lips to save a whole city. But in this part of the story, God uses Jonah's story, right, to save these sailors, which means your story can do damage, right? Damage for the kingdom of God in a good way. So let's, as a church, not be afraid to be liberal in telling our story. Whether you're city group or discipleship huddle, or you're out eating dinner with friends, right, in downtown Benson, that we would be liberal in taking risks and being authentic with our story so that people would be able to come in and experience the supernatural power of God in your life and come to him. Lesson number 4, our fleeing requires a sacrifice. That our fleeing, like Jonah's, requires a sacrifice. We read that the sailors, like we mentioned earlier, rowed hard to get back to dry land, right? They tried really, really hard not to sacrifice Jonah to the sea. And so to put it another way, you could say that they thought they could escape the storm through trying harder. They thought, man, I don't want to listen to what Jonah wants us to do. That we're a little worried about sacrificing an innocent man here. Let's try really, really hard to try to get out of this storm. But we read in the text that as they rowed harder and harder, that the storm got worse and worse to the point where they finally threw down the paddles and said, we cannot do this anymore. Like, we are literally going to die trying to get out of this storm. We have to go with plan B, with what Jonah wants, to throw him overboard. And so that's what they do. And this is such a good illustration, friends, for how someone becomes a Christian. When you want to become a Christian, there's really only two options. One is to try harder to escape the wrath of God and judgment for what you've done wrong and for your fleeing. Or two, you can trust in a sacrifice. You can trust in someone else's sacrifice, someone else's work on your behalf. And it wasn't until the sailors finally were tired enough that they surrendered and went with Jonah's option to throw him into the sea. And what happened? When they threw him into the sea, the storm stopped and they were saved. And it's at this point in the story where we're going to stop and pause for a little bit to show how this sacrifice, Jonah's being thrown overboard, actually points us to the story, the overall story of the Bible, to see how Jonah, right, Jonah's story points us to the greater Jonah. And so look with me at this contrast between Jonah and Jesus as we see how Jonah is contrasted with Jesus and how Jonah points us to Jesus. I love how in Matthew 12:40, Jesus says this, for just as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of a great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. I love how Jesus does two things here. One, he just says, hey, Jonah's an actual person. Right? Jonah's not just this made-up, cute little story for Sunday school. Right? Jonah was an actual person in actual history. And then second of all, that he's tying Jonah's story with his story. He's overlapping the two, showing how Jonah was a foreshadowing of Jesus and what he was going to go through. So let's take a minute to look through this table that I made for us, contrasting Jonah and Jesus. First of all, in Jonah's story, we see that Jonah fled from his enemies. Right? He did everything possible to get away from his enemies in Nineveh. Jesus, however, pursued his enemies all the way to the cross. Even when he was getting nails in his hands, he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Even when the men were nailing nails in his hands, he was pleading to the Father to give them mercy, to be compassionate on them. In Jonah's story, we see that Jonah was asleep in the boat because he was tired from running from God's will. But in Jesus' story, we see that Jesus was asleep in a boat once during a storm because he was tired from doing God's will. He had just gotten done healing the sick, teaching all day long, meeting people's needs, showing compassion and mercy on them. He was tired, so that's why he was taking a nap. He was doing God's will. In Jonah's story, we see lots being cast to prove that Jonah was guilty. In Jesus' story, we also see lots being cast. We see lots being cast for Jesus' clothes to strip him naked, although he was fully innocent. In the story of Jonah, we see Jonah saving the sailors' lives by being hurled into the sea as a sacrifice for his disobedience because he was in the wrong. In Jesus' story, we see Jesus saving our lives, the lives of the world, the whole world, by being hurled on a cross as a sacrifice for our disobedience, not his. In Jonah's story, we see that the sailors thought Jonah was innocent. That's why they tried to save him. They didn't want to throw him overboard, but really deep down he was guilty. And in Jesus' story, we see this interaction with Pilate, and Pilate examined him, and Pilate knew he was innocent, although the crowd thought he was guilty, and therefore killed him. In Jonah's story, we see that Jonah was saved by God the Father. His life was spared from physical death and was in the fish for 3 days and three nights. But in Jesus' story, we see that Jesus was not saved, but rather abandoned by God the Father to physical death on the cross and was in the tomb for 3 days and three nights. Isn't this beautiful? Isn't it awesome to see that Jesus is the greater Jonah? That Jesus was sacrificed for the sins of the whole world so that the storm of God's wrath and judgment for me and you would be stopped and would be calmed so that we could live at peace with God the Father forever and ever into eternity. Jesus was thrown overboard for your sin and for my sin so that God would have no more anger, no more wrath left, but only a love and deep commitment for us. That's what Jesus did. Lesson number five, lastly, our fleeing requires an intervention. That our fleeing, like Jonah's, requires an intervention. So let me ask you a question. Was Jonah being punished in wrath or being disciplined in love here? Was Jonah being just punished in wrath or being disciplined in love here? I would submit to you that this was an intervention, a form of biblical discipline, not punishment. Why? Well, let's ask the question, who absorbed the wrath for Jonah's sin? Was it Jonah or Jesus? Jesus, right? Jonah lived. Jonah didn't die. He was not the sacrifice, right? Jesus was the sacrifice for Jonah's sin as well as every other person in the Old Testament. Jesus on the cross died for everyone that had come before him and everyone that was to come after him. So this was not, he was not being punished in wrath, but rather disciplined by God. So this was an intervention for Jonah's good and for God's glory. So when we are fleeing from God, we have to know that he always intervenes for our good. Biblical discipline means it's a course correction in your life. It's a redirection, right? It's for someone who is heading down the wrong path or someone who is in denial. And when you have an intervention for somebody, say like an AA, right? It's for their good. It's to redirect them, and it's to help them, and it's out of love. So Jonah was thrown out of the boat. Why? So that God could redirect him. He was thrown off the ship because the ship was heading in the opposite direction as Nineveh. So when he was thrown off the boat and swallowed up by this great fish, the fish did what? Turned around and went straight towards Nineveh, the place he didn't want to go. Right? It was a redirection. It was for Jonah's good and the good of Nineveh because God was not done yet with his plan of salvation for Nineveh. God's like, I'm going to save that city, and so I'm going to take Jonah here. He was in rebellion. He was in denial. I'm going to redirect him and head him straight back to Nineveh to preach the good news because I want that city to be saved. So this idea of intervention and discipline is so helpful for our church to understand because a lot of our Christian lives are marked by fear and insecurity, aren't they? If we look at fear here, it's actually one of the biggest themes in chapter 1. Verse 5 says that the mariners, the sailors, were afraid. Verse 10, it says that the men were exceedingly afraid. I'm afraid of my mic. So these guys had a fear-based relationship with their gods. Their gods were volatile. Their gods were unpredictable. They thought if they were to disobey that they would get the hammer every time. Not so with the God of the Bible. The Bible says that Jesus removed the wrath of God and anger towards our sin, right? So there's no more wrath left. There's no more anger left towards you, only love and commitment. So when God intervenes in your life and God disciplines you and does a course correction, it's because he's not done with you. You can't outrun God's grace. Jonah experienced that. Jonah was trying to flee and trying to get away, but God's intervention into his life showed that God was relentlessly committed to Jonah, relentlessly committed to giving him grace and forgiveness, and to still use him on mission, to not throw him aside and raise up another prophet. He said, no, I'm gonna course correct Jonah. I'm going to be committed to him, and I'm going to give him grace to finish the mission that I have for him. Jonah could not outrun God's grace. And that is the big idea for this morning, although it took a long time to get there, that you can't outrun God's grace. You don't have to live in fear. You don't have to live with anxiety. When God shows up in your life and intervenes through people, especially through the church and people around you, you can know that God is going to finish the work that he started in you. He's committed to you. I know you need to hear this morning because I need to hear it. That's why I know you need to hear it. Listen, I probably read more Christian books than the majority of you in this room. I probably had more evangelism training on how to share my faith than any of you in this room, right? But I continually fail like Jonah. I'm a pastor who continues to flee from God and his will all the time, and yet God continues to give me grace. God continues to give me opportunities to pastor like City Light Benson, like this opportunity right now, even though I don't deserve it. God has been so relentlessly committed to me and loves me so much, and I am just in awe of God's love for me. I mean, think about it. The more you're a Christian, the more grace you need. Isn't that true? The longer you're a Christian, the more grace you need. Because we see in the story that God was so compassionate towards the city of Nineveh, that their evil had come up before him, right? But yet, at the end of the book, he says, they don't know their left hand from their right. They're ignorant. And so doesn't it take more grace towards people like Jonah who knew all the right things but don't do them? And that's where we get a picture of God's heart. Because we, as God's people, okay, not think about Benson or the people of our city for a second, it's us. God has given us amazing experiences of his grace. God has given us his word, which you've heard probably hundreds of sermons. And we are people that know a lot but don't continually do it. That takes a lot of grace. And God joyfully and relentlessly wants to give us that grace every single week. He is a good and faithful God. And once we comprehend that and apprehend that more and more, there's no limit to the amount of compassion and grace that we can give Benson.